The presenting sponsor of Moon Tower Soccer is FVF Law.
To find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm, you can visit FVF.law.
Hello, friends. Thanks for listening to Moon Tower Soccer. This week, we review Austin's draw at home against St. Louis City. We will preview the upcoming Philadelphia Union match and cover a few other pieces of Austin FC news. My name is Landon Cottom, and I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Jeremiah Bentley. And for the second time today, by Mr. Jeremiah Bentley.
Hey, everybody. I'm Jeremiah Bentley. And before we get to the other person on the show today, I wanted to ask, like, how much do you think overthink saying hello, friends, now after the feedback you've gotten the last couple of weeks on being either too enthusiastic or not enthusiastic enough?
Well, two weeks ago, I didn't hear anybody say anything, but I myself thought that it was like a little weak. And so the next week I was feeling a little tired and I was like, I got to really make sure and amp this one up to make up for last week. And I feel like I overcorrected. And that's the one that people commented on. So I think I did a good job today, but listeners, let me know.
Yeah, today feels like a very balanced hello, friends. And we are happy again to be joined this week by the one and only Mike Ellison. How you doing, Mike?
Doing well. Jeremiah, I am sorry. I am using my work Slack account or my work Zoom account, so it shows my unmarried name.
Oh, geez, that's right. Mike Crignola. That seemed weird. Now I know why.
Yeah. So spoilers, y'all, before we get into all of this, I want to take a minute and complain about bureaucracy, because it's hard to change your last name when you get married. I think generally this is a patriarchy thing. I am fully convinced that if it were socially acceptable for men to change their last names, it would be an online form that you fill out at most, if not automatically done when you get married. And so women out there and anyone who has ever changed their last name after marriage, I feel your struggle. Woof, it's annoying.
Hey, the Cornioles did a new show last week. Do you want to talk about what that was and what we can expect out of it?
Yeah, so we launched a new show on the feed called the Swoon Tower Opponent Spotlight. And basically, it comes from kind of a mission that we have to like stretch our legs a little bit as creators and talk a little bit more tactically about the team that we love. We get you podcasters who can do both, right? We want to be podcasters that focus on the arts and culture stuff, but also we like soccer and we understand what we're looking at. And so we wanted to connect with other local media around the teams that we'll be facing throughout the year, talking to them about what the differences are between the national narrative of their team and the local narrative of their team, and kind of get that perspective from those folks. We had a really great first episode with Anna Maria Liu from the Wannabe Fans podcast in St. Louis. This week we will be talking, fingers crossed, with a very cool guest from Philadelphia Union spheres. And so be on the lookout for that on the day before match days. So for those Saturday games, we'll be releasing on Fridays. If we can squeeze in those double game week days, we'll see how that goes. But you should see those probably early morning on match day so that we don't interrupt y'all's normal Tuesday release cycles.
Yeah, y'all definitely check that out. Mike and Steph are, if y'all haven't noticed, they're very good at making entertaining content, and this is not an exception. So check it out whenever the next one posts. Jeremiah, you and I were on the Sportico podcast stage at South by Southwest today, and how do you feel about that? I think it was fun, right?
I think it was fun. I think we're both tired now from doing that. Yeah, we were joined by Brian C. Parker, got out of our comfort zone a little bit and talked more about the Major League Soccer and if its position in the global game and sort of the growth of the sport and of the game in this country in the context of like telling a little bit of the Austin FC story, because Austin is a success. My dad was super excited, but mostly because I got to share a green room with Stephen A. Smith, who is his favorite sports media personality, not me. But it's like, it's fine. It's cool. It's good. And I think your reflection was that Stephen A. is a lot taller than you expected him to be.
He's very tall. Me and Mike were talking about this off air before you joined the call, Jeremiah. And I looked it up and Google says he's 6'1", but You saw that man walk past us, right?
Yeah, he seemed
6'3", right?
Like,
at least
I thought he was like 5'7". So like the fact that he was taller than me was what surprised me.
Yeah, I always had the perception that he was not a tall guy on TV. To find out that he would like tower over me is crazy.
Yeah, we stayed around and got to watch some of what he does, and it is a feat to behold. Like, the man just got on stage and held court for an hour before his first guest even came out, which is like, it's not necessarily my favorite kind of content, but the man is very good at it.
And covered every sport.
I have heard that he's not like his like character in real life. Were you able to talk to him at all?
No, he had like a huge entourage with him, and there was like a bunch of people in there. Like the Sportico people were trying to talk to him and stuff, so we weren't gonna try to step in there.
It's crazy. I was checking my phone all day, and I didn't get asked to be part of your entourage. I'm just, you know. Oh. I could have kept people from y'all.
They actually told us we were their favorite people because they didn't have to worry about us because we didn't bring anybody or anything for them to have to mess with. All right. Let's get into this week's story of the week. So Austin played to a 2-2 draw at home against St. Louis City. Conceded a very late goal when, for large stretches of the game, it looked like they were going to wrap it up and get the victory. I actually missed this game live and had just a rewatch, which is part of the reason why we have Mike here, because it made me just feel a little more comfortable having two people on the show who saw the game live when I didn't get to do that. So I guess y'all tell me, what was it like in the stadium? I got the buffer of like kind of following along on my phone and then going back and watching, but I can imagine that second goal was pretty heartbreaking inside of Q2.
Yes. I don't have any much to say beyond that, but I mean, it was just so close. Although it almost seemed like a point. It seemed like 3 points that Austin maybe didn't deserve too, and the stats will bear this out, right? Like, all the vibes were on her side, but really realistically after the first 20 minutes or so, like, Austin was a little bit under like being assailed, and St. Louis had a lot of the ball and a lot of the offense and had some lucky bounces to keep the ball out. So to live through all that and then to sort of give it all up at the end and then go out of the withdrawal was very deflating.
Yeah, this felt like a real momentum swingy game live in the stands. That last minute goal really, really was a gut punch. But even as we were walking out of the stadium, Steph and I were saying to each other, like, that might have been the best we've looked in a long time. And so like, there's definitely positives to take out of it. I was actually saying that I was like lamenting coming on because that's like my normal brand of like, you know, there's good things to take out of this, even when sometimes those good things are very few. But like this time I really felt it. And then watching the match again today, I'm ready to double down on that.
And for me, I think the best thing out of it was the resilience, right? That Austin gives up the goal on the penalty at like 49, and then 2 minutes later comes back around. And I feel like that was the most encouraging thing is for Austin to concede, to make it a draw, and then to take the lead again, because I feel like there's been so much of either concede and hang on and hope for a draw, or concede and like that starts a tidal wave of negativity. And so for Austin to show some resilience and like turn right back around and get another goal was, for me, the most encouraging part of the match.
Yeah, I think St. Louis City is a team that plays with a lot of intensity, and Austin came out and matched that for most of the game. I'd say there's times where they got a little overwhelmed by that intensity, but at the first 15 minutes, I thought Austin looked like the better team by far up until that goal and for maybe a few minutes after. And we'll get into some of the negative here in a second, but I think Mike is absolutely right that the fight that we saw in the players was positive. And then also in those first 15 minutes, they were just playing soccer. Like, they were actually playing the game and not
like
looking
our
like
game.
Yeah. It was in the system, but then in those moments where we've often seen them look scared or or a little too conservative in certain moments. They are just going for it and trying to play. And I feel like Diego Rubio had a lot to do with that, with the way he was playing in that position. And this is a thing that we didn't talk about. Jeremiah, you and I talked about last week of, we don't have anybody who can play that position. A clear omission is Diego Rubio is the closest guy we have to Sebastian Gerussi, right? I think we had in our minds like, okay, he's the nine. So it's not the same thing, but this is a thing we talked about when we signed him, is like, there might be moments where you would like to play Rubio and another striker. And with Gerussi out, this was the opportunity. And I feel like four moments during the game, it worked fairly well.
Yeah. I think I was also really encouraged by the way we came out in the second half. A lot of times, right, Austin will go into the dressing room at the half and then come out, and the opposing team has made changes that we don't counter. But like through the first 35 minutes of that second half, we had more possession than we had had in the first half. And so like, not only did we come back out and play our game again, but we were doing it well again, even considering some individual errors that led to that goal, that first penalty goal.
Jeremiah, do you want to run us through some of, I guess, turning to the negative, some of the stats from this game?
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems weird to talk about that and then kind of go through the numbers. So possession, I realize now I wrote Seattle when I meant St. Louis here in these stats, but possession was 60-40 St. Louis. Shots were 17-5, shots on targets 8-2. X goal, I think Austin had 0.96, and most of them came from the Cascante header on the second goal. So still, like, statistically, it was an underwhelming performance for Austin, despite the fact that the eye check made them look, I think, a lot better than Austin has in the first two matches of the season.
And like, to that point, right, at the half, possession was 60-40 St. Louis. And then like 75th-ish minute or so, we were looking at a 45% possession for Austin. So like, we had clawed back a bunch of that possession before coughing it up again. So like, it like, you know, that momentum chart kind of highlights how that match went.
Jeremiah, what are some of the other stories that you wanted to talk about in this game?
Oh, I guess one question was, like, I saw this, a lot of criticism, because every time everything goes wrong, there's a lot of criticism online. And I tried to, like, not read any today before we recorded the live show particularly. But except of the bunkering and the subs at the end, and to Mike's point about how Austin had started to, like, make up some ground of possession and sort of blew it all at the end, like, I mean, what do y'all think? What would you do trying to hold on to that lead?
I personally don't have a ton of issue with the subs. I like talking about bunkering. There's a difference in bunkering and getting pinned down. I don't think it was a conscious decision by Austin FC to stay in their own box for most of the last 20 minutes. I think that is a thing that St. Louis did to them. But they made some subs, got some fresh legs on, and started. I think the introduction of João Klaus changed the game quite a bit. They kept a dinner on pretty quiet, and then Klaus came on and they started launching balls at him, and he was able to either bring them down or knock them down onto on-running guys, and was really giving the defense a lot of trouble. And then they bring on Ostrak and Alm and some other fresh legs. That's when it started turning. So it was before the substitutions that Austin was pinned back. It's still a problem, but it's a different problem in my mind of Austin letting St. Louis dictate the game like that. But whenever the subs come on, I think the only one that I like, the only thing that I've seen online that I maybe kind of agree with is the argument that why not put Owen at right back instead of Ethan Finley. I get that argument, but you're going to have a tired person somewhere. And Mike, I saw you talking about this online today, that if you watch through that last goal that Austin gave up, Owen was part of the problem on the other side of the ball. Yeah. And I'd say maybe more of a problem than Ethan Finley was in that moment.
Yeah, Ethan Finley is like eighth and ninth in my list of nine problems with that play. I kind of broke it down from the point that like Ostrak makes that pass to Totland, right? Or Ostrak receives the pass before the pass to Totland, right? And you see Owen hasn't closed down Ostrak, and so that pass is wide open. Biru lets Totland just kind of wander into free space to receive the ball. And then Heinzeich and Hedges don't know who's going to close that down, right? And already we're at four problems before the ball ever like even leaves Totland's foot to go toward where poor Ethan Finley is like gassed out of his mind at the end of this game. It just really tough set of play there. Like
it was a team failure, as they say. Well,
yeah.
And the other point I had was like, I feel like this was definitely the first game where I noticed the officials being in the way.
Woof.
Like one of them, like a guy got hit on one ball. Like there was like an extra defender a lot of times. And we haven't talked a lot about, other than just the fact that there is a, like it's officially a lockout and replacement or scab referees calling these games, depending upon what you call them. But would y'all agree that this one seemed like the refs were a bigger factor just all the way around negatively than they have been in the past?
For us, yeah, I think this was a tough one. Seeing how upset King Bradley Stuber was about not following the like laws of the game was like, that's not a guy who like reacts like that, right? And so it was, yeah.
It seemed like that ref was trying to say that he hadn't blown the whistle, therefore he was going to let them take that corner again. But it seemed very much like everyone was set and ready to play. And so the argument was like, if it hits the ball, it's a drop ball in that spot to the team that it affected, essentially. But he lets them take the corner again. But yeah, I don't know, man. And then, yeah, and then the same guy trips John Gallagher at one point.
It was a great tackle on John Gallagher, to be fair. Yeah.
Were there other moments that y'all saw in the stadium, or are those kind of the two main ones?
I think the thing for me that like really was surprising was how slow to call fouls the ref was. Like there's at one point a challenge in midfield that Austin is awarded a penalty for, or like Austin is awarded the ball after the foul. And at the same time, someone like just destroys AZ Jackson.
It was Matt Hedges.
Yes.
I know what you're talking about. It's like, yeah, like a pink card. Yes. Offense, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's certainly an orange, right? it was a hard foul. And because the ref was so slow to blow the whistle on the foul that had happened before, he got away with it.
Yeah.
But he probably shouldn't have. Or it wouldn't even have happened if the ref had blown the whistle at the right time instead of being so slow to do so, right? And I think those are the things that, as fans of the game, we probably don't notice as much with replacement refs, but certainly doesn't happen with the best available referee crews.
Yeah. So, Jeremiah, you went through some of the stats, offensive stats still pretty, like, offensive output still pretty anemic in open play. But I think another positive here is we've heard Josh Wolf talk about how they brought on a new coach to focus on set pieces. I think this game, we've seen little bits and pieces, but in this game, you could see all of the work that they've put into set pieces. It seemed like every corner, every longer free kick, every throw in, they had some type of proper set piece. It wasn't just like organized and run into the box. It was like very like strategized, organized plays that they were running. And we get two goals out of those, essentially. And I think that is a positive, that if we're not going to be dangerous offensively, to show that we are consistently being dangerous on these set pieces now, that is a positive we can take away from this game.
All right. Well, let's on that positive note, let's take a break and then we'll come back and get into the game in more detail. When no one is around.
Moot Tower Soccer is brought to you by our friends at FVF Law, the official injury lawyers of Austin FC.
FVF is a different kind of personal injury law firm dedicated to community transparency and client education, and a law firm that has their own podcast called Summary Judgment. Check it out wherever you get your podcasts.
You can go to FVF.law to find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm and why understanding your legal options can dramatically change the outcome of a case. Once again, that's FVF.law.
Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by Sage Wilson Realty. The Sage Wilson team is made up of Austin experts who are client-focused and have over 30 years of combined real estate experience. Our friends at Sage Wilson Realty are giving away 2 tickets to an upcoming match, so fill out the forms and the show notes for your chance to win.
If you or someone you know are in need of Sage real estate advice in Austin, talk to our friends at Sage Wilson Realty. Check them out online at sagewilson.com. All right, we are back. So leading up to this game, Josh Wolf told the media last week that Drewsi was still questionable. I think Thursday or Friday, we get the announcement that Antonio Gomez will be called up on a short-term loan, as well as Jimmy Farkerlund, which this is the first time that he's gotten that call-up. And so this is a thing Wolf kind of... Wolf went out of his way. I went to the media availability last week, and I noticed that he went out of his way to bring up Jimmy's name. He called him Bryant again, but went out of his way to say his name in one of the answers where, like, the question wasn't about him. And so I was like, okay, maybe this is going to happen. Oh, and then, Mike, you posted that that photo of him at the Verde store with a bunch of jerseys with his name on them. Seemingly for sale at the Verde store, but it seems like maybe that wasn't the full truth.
Yeah, not only did I share that photo everywhere I could possibly on the internet because I thought it was the cutest thing, I went to the Verde store to see because I was around the corner enjoying a coffee at Turnstile, and I figured I may as well pop over. They were not there, but I did overhear some of the workers talking about how Jimmy had come in, hung them up for a photo, and then taken them home with him. So I assume they were for friends and family who were there to support him, right?
Yeah, that's cool. Amazing, and he did end up made the game day 20, right? So that's a positive step forward for him.
And just so cute. Like, here's 4 of my own jersey that I'm manifesting being sold in the store, right? Love that.
So in this starting 11, I think there was a couple of smaller surprises, right? So the back line, not many surprises there. We had Stuver in goal, Kolmanich and Gallagher as fullbacks, Hedges and Cascante as the center backs. And then in the midfield, this was a thing that we talked about last week, is that Valencia seems undroppable at the moment. And then Danny Pereira doesn't seem like a real option as a lone 10 in this shape. And apparently Josh Wolf agreed, because we saw Ring and Valencia playing as pretty much like a straight up double pivot. I know I like to quibble with the semantics of what Austin's midfield is. And whenever people call Drewsi the 10, it's like, oh no, we have 2 10s. But in this game, it very much was like 2 central midfielders and then Diego Rubio playing as a 10. Mike, I also saw you post a quote that he gave Michel Sanchez about playing like as a 9.5, which is about right. It's kind of the way Drewsi plays the 10, where, yeah, he'll drop in, but also he's going to get up on that front line and kind of play off of the striker as well. And so, but he was the only one doing that. There was not another midfielder kind of playing behind him as well. It was that line of 2. And then him up there alone. So, and then the front 3 were Obreon on the left, Zardes at the 9, and Finley on the right. What are y'all's thoughts on Danny being out of the lineup there?
Mike, I feel like you have an opinion on it. I know, because I read it. So, like, go ahead and share.
Yeah, I do. So, I guess the first the first opinion that I have on this is that I'm glad that Danny as a 10 as an experiment is seemingly coming to a slower or to like a quicker end. I think Danny playing this high up in the field is tough for him. I think when he's further back, the game slows down a little bit and his decision making is a little bit like more like comfortable. I think a lot of his issues so far have been trying to get back involved in the play when the ball isn't like being fed into him. Because he's so good at dribbling out of pressure, right? But like being in the space to receive that pass, to be able to do that further up the field, seems like it's been a missing piece for our offense.
Yeah, I think I was most excited to see Rubio and Zardes on the field together.
Same.
To see what that might mean for both of them. And I didn't watch a lot of Colorado Rapids when they were both there, but I know from some people who did watch them said that they did a pretty decent job combining and were thought that was maybe a way to create some offense that we hadn't seen before and some dangerousness in the attack. And I think that did bear itself out. So I was very excited to see that and see how that was gonna play out.
Mike, we were talking a bit off air about you being a little concerned if Rubio would be able to fit on the field with Driussi. So like having Rubio as the 9 and Driussi as that 9.5-10 behind him. I think it could work. I could be wrong, but I feel like I think it could cut both ways, right? Because they're two similar players, they can kind of interchange with each other and kind of go where the other one's not. But it could also mean they're going to the same place and nobody's doing the other thing. And so, it'll be interesting to see, but I kind of think that it can work. I don't know if it will, but I think it can.
Yeah, would our midfield then be a double pivot where we've got Johan and Alex doing a double pivot at the 6 and then Rubio and Driussi doing a double pivot at that like 9.5?
Yeah, more or less. It's like it's like the pulley system, right? Like you go, I stay kind of thing. Like if Rubio as the 9 pulls wide and gets on the ball, Driussi is absolutely comfortable stepping up onto that line and holding that space there, or like running behind or like occupying a center back. Like he's happy to do that and good at it. And so that's why I think it could work. But again, we haven't seen it yet. So I'll be interesting to see if and when Driussi gets on the field again, like how that actually looks.
Yeah, and they've both got motors, right? So like they're both going to track back and they're both going to run and like support the rest of the plan. One thing that like as I rewatched this afternoon, I noticed that like Rubio never let Zardes press on his own. Like anytime Zardes would trigger a press, like Rubio was right there to do it with him, which is not always been the case with Zardes's pressing choices. So, yeah.
All right, let's get into some of the main events from this game. So, as we mentioned before, Austin seemed pretty in control for the first 15 minutes or so. That goal from Matt Hedges comes in the 14th minute. So, this is on a corner. Again, talking about the set pieces, this was a very organized, planned play. And so what they did was the center back started on the far post, and then as Kolmanich raises his arms and says like, okay, play starts now, those center backs sprint across the 6-yard box to the near post. Zardes started near the goalkeeper, goes to the same spot as the two center backs, and then while that's happening, Ring makes a run back post. Johan Valencia went to the penalty spot. And then Diego Rubio was like up against the keeper and kind of bumps the keeper and then just kind of drops off a couple of yards off of the goal line there and is waiting in that area. So the idea is to aim for those big units on the near post, clip one of them on the head. If it goes in, it goes in. Or you have all these runs on the back side to catch the ball on the backside if it does get across. This time, I mean, it goes straight in on this one, of course, but I really like the look of this. I imagine teams will be watching film on this and figure out how to challenge this, but we were doing less, what's creative. The word I'm looking for? Yeah, less creative things last year and still seem to find Julio's head pretty regularly. And so if we're actually putting a bit of deception in these plays, hopefully that can still continue to bear fruit. But yeah, Hedges runs across, wrestles Durkin out of the way, throws him on the ground, wins the header, and tucks it into that far post.
Before the next goal, there's that nervy moment where Edvard Lewin ends up
that free kick
completely alone.
Oh, there's
yeah, like he's at the top of the box, and because Stuver has come out to
that's right,
a gigantic wall, right? After a blown spell of possession with a tough touch from Obreon turns into a transition and opportunity for St. Louis.
Yeah, Stuver came off the line and probably should not have. And then Gallagher is there to win the ball. And because he sees Stuver there, he backs off and then nobody wins the ball. And yeah, it ends up with Lewin taking a shot from the 18 with only Johan Valencia in goal. And he hits it over the top, luckily. And then not long after that, Lewin gets a free kick from pretty far out, but he strikes it really low and hard through traffic, hits the far post. It bounces back across the goal. Stuver reaches out and gets a finger to it and then still has to dive into the goal and slap it out. Mike, I guess you probably had a better view from this than anybody from y'all's seats. And Jeremiah, you're not far off there either. Could y'all what was your instinct during the game? Did that cross the line?
During the game, I was shocked that it wasn't called a goal. I don't know about you, Mike, but I was like, I'd already thrown my hands in the air in disgust about conceding one, and then I couldn't believe it when like the horn didn't go off and nothing had happened. Was that did you get a better view of it?
Yeah, I think we had a little bit better view where we were. It was a the English say it was squeaky bum time. And that's how I felt. Like I was very clenched. But it looked like it was right on the line the whole time. I said that over the line goal that didn't get called last year, I called that 100% more of a goal than this one was. But this one felt like 90% of a goal, you know?
According to Stuver, it was clearly a save, you know, which
clearly,
what else would you expect your keeper to say? Yeah, it was no way it was over the line.
I mean, he had the best perspective for sure. So I would trust his word.
Rewatching on the broadcast, there was not a good angle. And this is a thing we've complained about on the show a lot of times. Luckily, in this case, it went in our favor that there wasn't a good angle there. But what did look pretty clear to me is that if it had gone in, I think this gets marked down as a Stuver own goal. Because I don't think it strikes the post. I don't think it's going in off of that first deflection. But there's like St. Louis players waiting on that near post. So I think Stuver knows if I let this go, there's people waiting there. So I need to touch it. But he didn't touch it good enough. He's able to just get a finger to it and then has to dive in. So yeah, lucky break there. I don't know if we'll ever get a good enough angle, but it seemed like they did not take much time to review that. Play did not slow up at all. They just started again and went.
Yeah, a friend of the show and also neighboring seat friend Andrew Zapruder'd this film, and he had called out the moment when the chalk from the line kicks up in the air, and he's like, "See, this is how you know that wasn't a goal." So
I don't know if that's solid evidence there.
Scientific evidence.
Just after halftime, so we go into the halftime 1-0, right?
Right.
Yeah, so just after halftime, 48th minute, Alex Ring brings down Aziel Jackson for a penalty. A very clear penalty in my mind. I think a very silly play by Alex Ring, a guy that I've complained on this show a lot, who isn't very good at just like taking a ball off of someone. And to go in on like the shiftiest player on the field inside of the penalty box, like, I just don't understand what he's thinking there. He's a little too confident in his abilities in that moment, I think.
Yeah, I wonder if last year or 2022 Alex Ring makes that play and we say, what a guy. That's why he's got the armband, you know, when we move on. But 2024 version of Alex Ring, certainly a step behind on that one.
Yeah. So Lubin sends Stuver the wrong way and scores to tie it. Doesn't take Austin to catch back up. So in the 51st minute, another set piece. Gallagher takes a long throw, finds Cascante, but he's challenged in the air, doesn't get a clean contact on it. Falls to Obreon at the top of the box. As everyone resets, Obreon clips it out to Ring on the left side. He hits a cross over the top with his first touch. And again, you've got the three big boys in the 6-yard box. It finds the last one, which is Cascante at the back post. And he awkwardly, but pretty still pretty effectively gets his head on it and puts it in. So again, good set piece execution. One of the positives from the game.
Yeah, this feels like the mirror version of the first set piece, just from a throw instead of a corner.
Very, very similar. Like the initial setup was still very similar. And then once it went to the backside, we had guys in places. So I noticed Obreon on almost every set piece was waiting there at the top of the box. And the idea was to get that ball, like that ball that came out. And it looked like to me also, there was some free kicks from deeper, where everyone would line up at the 18, and then some of them would run forward and two or three of them would stay back. And it seemed like the idea was to find one of those heads and intentionally like knock it back to one of those guys. I was watching in the broadcast that showed Alex Ring talking to Obreon, and he kind of made this hand motion that made it look like this is the plan. Like, we're going to go and try to knock it back to you at the top of the box, which again, really interesting to watch all that.
Well, and it goes to what Joshua says about the importance of second balls, right? They're constantly talking about this, talking about how the training staff talks about the second ball as being part of the set piece routine. And I think we see it a few times here.
Yeah. So in the 68th minute, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say it was one of the things they were really, really good at in 2022 that they have not been good at in 23 is that secondary ball on set pieces.
Yeah, 68th minute, Jean and Obreon come out. Biro comes in at left back and Ragoni in at left wing. I thought Biro looked good. Like, I'm very excited to see this man play for 60 minutes or so.
Yeah, I felt bad for Hader Obreon to have to come out. Like, that man put in a shift. He did very hot air Obreon things, but also, we got both sides of that coin this match, and I think that we were lucky to have that.
Yeah, really good energy from him again, but just still a little sloppy in moments where it mattered.
Yeah.
And I will follow the consensus to say that Ragoni was bad again, and I'm just so done. Like, he didn't do anything to change anything in this game.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the hair. Maybe it's the blonde hair.
Too much pressure on him now.
Yeah, he was okay, like, brown-haired, and he's just, like, dead awful as a blonde.
Yeah. With Kolmanich coming out, I was reminded earlier today that Mikkel Dessler will be coming to Austin in the summertime. And I just think that is going to change the look of this team a lot. So,
yeah, I mean, imagining a day when if Biru can be what we've seen flashes of for 90 minutes consistently, again, with more time in a larger sample size, we'll find out if that's going to be true or not. But that and then Mikael Dessler, who I'm quite positive is going to be like a very, very good MLS player, like one of the better defenders in the league, like maybe not top five, but top 10, I'd say. Like, I think he could be that good. Imagining a back line with those two in it instead of, like, again, these guys have been good soldiers for us, but they have their limits in certain parts of the field. And that gives us something to look forward to as well.
Yeah, because at this point, right, like this sub is kind of the peak of that St. Louis like momentum chart is coming up pretty soon here, where like Austin, we're kind of done playing that high intensity game at this point, because we just don't have the bodies and the speed to keep up.
And again, this is before the subs that people have been complaining about, right? Like this is, this is not a choice Austin made. This is a choice St. Louis made.
Yeah.
And Austin could not stop. But yeah, 83rd minute, Rubio is dead, has to come out. They bring in Danny in his spot. Austin's under a ton of pressure for the rest of the game. Gallagher comes up cramping in the 90th minute. They bring on Brendan Heinzeich and Owen for Gallagher and Zardes. They move Ragone up top and move to like a 5-4-1 with Ethan Finley at that wingback position. And Mike talked about it, but that's a team concession right there. Like I think you could argue with good reason that there's different decisions that could have been made, but I don't know that any of them stopped that goal necessarily.
Do you think before Gallagher cramped, do you think the plan was to sub out Finley?
Possibly. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Because like Owen coming on for a winger and then playing Finley's position through the rest of the match, like maybe that's the instruction he's already given. And rather than like change a young player's like headspace when he goes into the match, who knows, right? But seemed like there was.
And then you're thinking the Heinzeich move was coming, like Austin was going to a back five no matter what.
Yeah, you know,
that was the.
I think like my point is that I think a lot of people took it as we're going to bunker and bringing this defender, when the way I see it, and I think what Wolf said afterwards, is like they had a ton of numbers forward and Austin was already pinned back. And so it's more like this is the reality of the game right now. How do we best match it? And that's why I don't mind going five at the back, because if you're already pinned, yeah, get more defenders in. I don't have any problem with that. I think where like the main negative to take away from this moment is that Austin continues to, whenever that momentum shifts against them, it seems like they cannot do anything to get out of that area and can like win a ball, prevent another set piece. It seems like whenever they get down in the area, they're just destined to give up corner after corner or chance after chance. And I think that is the thing that we should be most upset about, is like if you let them just sit in that part of the field for that long and take chance after chance, yeah, one of them's going to go in eventually. And I think that is a much bigger problem than Ethan Finley being a little bit tired at the end of the game. Any other player notes on this game?
Well, the one I wrote was like Brad Stuver a couple times had like long throws that were dangerous, which is not something that we've seen a lot at it, but I'm like way long throws, right? Like maybe into the attacking half, if not like close to it. And they were super, they were super dangerous. Again, it was good to have. I don't know if the set piece coach has anything to do with this, but again,
it's good to see
a change in approach.
I think this is, I will put this under the category of special teams for Austin FC. Like the same as these set pieces. This is a moment where you know where everyone's going to be. It's whenever Stuver makes a save and he knows that the opposition is all in his half of the field. And so they get someone up the field. It's Gallagher or O'Brien or whoever. and he's just going to launch it. And this is a thing that they've done consistently. Like, this is a plan. This isn't Struver going rogue and just doing it on his own. Like, I think it is the special teams coach, probably.
Yeah.
Special teams, the set piece coach.
The first one, I thought, oh, Brad's trying to get an assist. And, like, because the first one was out to Ragone, like, on a clear breakaway opportunity, right? I was like, oh, Brad's definitely trying for, like, a one assist game ever, right? But now, yeah, I think it's part of the plan, and I hope to God he gets that assist before it gets, like, figured out and squashed, you know? Talk about a guy who deserves one.
I mean, it's, I really like this strategy too, because again, even if teams do figure it out, like, what do you do to stop that? You have to sit someone, like, deeper.
Yeah.
And that's one fewer person on the attack in that moment. So it's like shifting their rest defense strategy by with Brad Struver throwing the ball, which is wild, but it's brilliant. I like it.
Yeah.
And it's something that allows Austin to play a little more like they want to play anyhow, right? Because suddenly they don't have that pressure and they can play it out of the back with a little less, you know, a little less fear. I think maybe it's just because they got the goals, but that was interesting in a game where Austin allowed two goals that, like, the central defenders were pretty strong. Because
yeah,
neither of those are really, I mean, obviously the penalty's not on them, but, like, I thought Hedges and Cascante both look really good. I'm super excited about Hedges playing the way he's played for three games this year after we were all convinced last year that he was busted and it was a huge waste of money and what was Austin going to do. But this year, he's probably been the best player on the team other than maybe Johan Valencia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How wild is that? Johan, it's like, I'm not taking them out of the team next week. I don't, would anybody argue for that?
Undroppable. You can't do it. Dude's been a beast and he's learned to pass forward. Like, I love it. I love watching Johan play. I also, my biggest question going into the season was, is Matt Hedges good? And right now I feel like you can say yes.
I think the question should have been, is Matt Hedges still good?
Yes. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Even early last year, I thought he was really good. And then, yeah, but it looks like we've got the same guy, right? So,
yeah. I liked when Joao Klaus came on and Julio was getting destroyed. I loved seeing, like, Hedges, like, come over and help out in those situations and watching the defense, like, shift around that, because that's going to happen. Our guy has, you know, max offense stats, but not so many on the defense side there for Cascante, right? And so having that backup of someone so responsible as Matt Hedges has been a revelation for him. So,
all right. Let's wrap the game up. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back with a few pieces of Austin FC news and we'll also do our Philadelphia Union preview. Hang tight.
Our premier sponsor is McGuire Woods Consulting. McGuire Woods Consulting helps clients in the public affairs space, from lobbying at the local, statewide, and federal levels to digital and communication campaigns across the country.
McGuire Woods Consulting has offices in 10 MLS cities, but only advertises on this podcast because it's the home of the two-time reigning Copa Tejas champions, which is the most important trophy in the world. Contact our friends at McGuire Woods Consulting at mwcllc.com for more information. Amplify Credit Union is a member-owned financial cooperative that serves the needs of Central Texans for over five decades. Amplify's team lives and works in the community, making them the experts on how members can achieve their financial goals.
What makes Amplify different? No bank fees. Amplify is the first financial institution in Texas to put an end to bank fees. In 2022, Americans paid almost $8 billion in overdraft fees alone. Millennials pay an average of $336 a year in bank fees. And I was at South By, and I was talking to these guys, and one of them worked at a bank. He was talking about how much the money they made in bank fees. And I said, you know who doesn't charge anybody any bank fees? Amplify Credit Union.
And then you
stop
threw your
screwing
drink
over
in
those millennials.
Face.
Right. Sorry, sir. I have to go now.
Amplify membership is open to any Texas resident. Learn to trust your bank again at Amplify Credit Union. To learn more and to sign up for free parking via the Amplify Moon Tower partnership, go to www.goamplify.com/moontower-soccer. That's goamplify.com/moontower-soccer. All right, we are back. We're going to get into our Philadelphia Union preview, but first, we have a couple of pieces of player news The first is Denny Pereira got called up to the Venezuelan national team again for a couple of matches in the U.S. Jeremiah, when are these happening? I don't have those dates in front of me.
Yeah, it's going to be two friendlies. They're both in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. The first one is against Italy on March 21st and Guatemala on March 24th. So he'll be in the squad for both those matches this month, which are also times when Austin FC will be in Florida, but on the other side of the state, I believe, because I think they conflict with the Orlando away match.
Oh, okay. Interesting. He keeps getting call-ups to the national team, right? And so it seems like signs are pointing towards that whenever Venezuela plays in Austin, is it in June, that Denny Pereira seems more and more likely to be in that team. If he keeps not starting for Austin FC, maybe that changes. But it seems like right now he seems to be in that group. The other piece of news is that Valentino L, he got a short-term loan up to the first team last weekend. And then I think a day or two later, we get the announcement that he's been sold to the Las Vegas Lights. So no longer an Austin FC 2 player, now playing in USL Championship. I guess I'll ask the question to y'all that Aggie from the Fighting Leslies asked me. He said, is this good news?
Great question.
And I said, my response was, and you guys can give your responses, I said it's not bad news. Would y'all agree with that, or y'all have a different opinion?
Yeah, it's news.
It's news. I mean, it's good news for Val. He's going to get to go play somewhere where he actually gets playing time. He scored a goal in his first match. There is an undisclosed fee. There's a fee of some point. I think Tom Bogert posted that there's like a sell-on potential. Although, like, really, I don't. 40% of a sell-on clause for guys 24 in the USL is like, sure, it's better than not. He wasn't going to get minutes in Austin. One thing I will agree with somewhat is this. I just don't understand why he never got a shot at all. Like when he got the call up, and Austin's playing Seattle, nothing's going on. Like just throw on the guy for a few minutes and see if he can contribute and participate. So I do share it with some. Like I know a lot of people get really annoyed by like Josh seeming to have his guys and not have his guys, and usually I disagree with those people. But I feel like Val Noel was somebody that should have got a little bit more of an opportunity in Austin, but knowing he wasn't going to get to. Good for him.
So I actually wonder about that because he got this short-term call-up, and then to Landon's point, like almost immediately after that Seattle match, it was announced that he was moving to Las Vegas. And so like if that deal is in process, you're not going to play the guy in case he gets hurt and then the deal falls through, right? So
Why call him up at all then?
Right. Yeah. I mean, like timing wise, right? It doesn't, I don't know. Unless it's like part of making it look like he's going to feature for our team. And so you need to pay for him instead of not.
Yeah. That's a realistic,
you know, like there's so many, business reasons to like frame him as a potential player for the squad if you're trying to make some money off him. But I don't know that we'll ever find out what that transfer fee was.
Yeah, I don't.
Las Vegas called it a substantial like expenditure or something along those lines in their press release about it. And so to have him go and score a goal in a very Val Noel move of like receiving the ball on the half turn, dribbling through space, and then like finding an open shot is great for, it feels like, all parties involved, right? We get to.
So that transfer fee you mentioned, we'll never know what it is. I posed a question online whether any of that money can be used towards the first team, and I actually got it confirmed via a source that the answer is no. And that was my instinct, but I couldn't find it in writing anywhere. But so it's one of those things. It's like the money goes into the organization. They can use it on whatever, but it cannot be used It does not affect the salary budget or our allocation money reserves.
Is there a world where sign and trades start to happen in MLS where you sign a guy from your next pro team onto
for
a day first
contract?
Team? Yeah.
And then sell him, and then you get all that allocation money.
Right.
There's got to be a simpler way to do it than that. Let's just hope that that's not. This league is complicated enough already.
So, yeah, I don't know. I'm just saying that those feel like very MLS opportunities, right?
I think we should mention, as Phil West has dubbed him, Jackson Salty's comments on the Val Noel trade. He's been the most salty, mostly talking about Val Noel's career, right? Like,
yeah, he really loves Val Noel, and I think that's great. I want someone to have my back the way Jackson Walty has Val Noel's back. Like, Steph is a great, even if they're wrong. Yeah. Steph is a great advocate for me, but like, if she were Jackson Walty level advocate for me, that would be really special.
Yeah. I mean, to go back to, is this good news? Yeah. I mean, it seems like my reading of it is Burrell and Wolf and company were probably never considering giving him that first team contract super seriously. And the writing was maybe on the wall there for Val, and he started asking for a move, and they found a way to do it. So hopefully this works out well for all parties. Val, I think he'll be a good USL player. I think he will do really well at that level. But as you mentioned, he is 24 years old, so this is not a play the kids. I think Moises made a joke about what if he becomes the next Mbappe, and it's like, he is 3 months younger than Mbappe.
Yeah, but what if, Landon?
What if? What if? All right. Anything else on that or any other news before we move on to our Philly preview?
I think we could just talk about the Philly match this weekend.
All right. Give us our stats, Jeremiah.
All right. 2023, Philly came off their first MLS Cup appearance, which is 2022. MLS Cup final appearance in 2022. I had high expectations, finished fourth in the East. Lost to FC Cincinnati in the playoffs, but they did go in two other competitions and went pretty far. They ended up in the semifinals in the CONCACAF Champions League, the final CONCACAF Champions League. And then they also made the League's Cup semifinals. I think they won the third place game. So strong year overall, maybe not, I think, what Philadelphia fans were hoping for when they came off this MLS Cup final, but still pretty solid year. So they... Landon's favorite player, Brandon Craig, Austin FC legend, was a player out in 2023.
They didn't want him to play for their first team, Jeremiah?
They did not.
Why would they do that?
Was he at USL? Is that where he is now?
He's playing in El Paso now.
Oh, in El Paso. Hey, I love El Paso as a city, by the way. So I think that's
enough. I do, too. I'm happy for him. I'm just shocked that a great soccer team wouldn't want him playing center back for their first team.
And then, yes. Then the other sort of like
to go
notable
all caps.
I know. I'm trying to stop him before he does. Go medium caps on that. And then they get Bedoya, Kai Wagner, who I think there were questions about either one of them. And what? Who was it? Was it the Bedoya one where everybody got all worked up online about it, and the player did too, or was that Wagner? Which one was that? I don't remember.
Bedoya was the one the fans were clamoring for, because he's a club legend. Like, he's a superhero there and has come up big for them. And he actually scored a goal last weekend to tie the game up against Kansas City at the, like, in the very last moment. So, but I think he was a DP for a long time, and he's 36 or something like that now. And so I don't think they were trying to bring him back for a ton of money, but they ended up working the deal out, and he's still playing for them.
Yeah.
Wagner was one who got into some trouble some alleged racist remarks towards another player, and then seemed like he was going to go for free to Europe, and nothing ever happened. It seemed like the best deal was back in Philly. So he kind of had an interesting return where it seemed like everyone definitely wanted to come back. And then after that whole turn of events, they're like, I'm not sure if we want you back or not, but he's there now.
Yeah. Andre Blake currently injured, apparently, but not in a like super severe way. So it'll be interesting to see if he plays or if it'll be their new keeper, Oliver Semmel, in goal.
Whose job Damian Loss took.
That's right.
Is Oliver Simley. I don't know how you say it.
Yeah. So, you know, they fielded a super rotated team against Sporting Kansas City in the last league match. So
they do have a really congested schedule coming up. They were playing.
Well, they're going to play in Seattle. They played like 30 minutes in Seattle, right? Or something.
I think it was like 6 minutes.
Oh, was it right? Okay. Less than that then.
They were supposed to play in Seattle, didn't really play. Then they play Tuesday night in Mexico against Pachuca for the second leg of their CONCACAF Champions Cup game. They drew their home leg. So they're probably going to put their starters in for this game on Tuesday and fight for that win. It's not because they didn't play the weekend before, it's not a crazy turnaround for them to play Tuesday and then Saturday, but hopefully that can lend at least a smallest advantage to Austin, having these guys play on slightly shorter rest than it would be if they weren't playing in that tournament.
Yeah. So hope for the like most grueling match on Tuesday night against Pachuca is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. That's what we're hoping for. So looking at Austin lining up against Philadelphia, I mean, their style of play is not so different from what St. Louis does. It's not exactly the same, but they are a team who that year in 2022, and they were so good, they were one of the few teams that was like dominant in the league and also did not like never dominated possession. They wanted to get the ball forward and play in the other half and get as many shots off as possible. What do you think we see from Austin? Like what is our midfield in this game?
Well, that was going to bring up the question I was thinking about when we were talking about the lineup in the St. Louis game. It's like, was that St. Louis lineup is it a function of health? Is it a function of the way St. Louis plays? Or is that like a wrinkle in Austin's plan going forward? And I think what Austin does against Philadelphia will be pretty instructive of that. I can't keep hoping Sebastian Drewsi will be back. He did make the bench on Saturday, but I can't imagine you're going to count on him for 90 minutes having not played this year. So I can absolutely see the same midfield against Philadelphia that Austin had against St. Louis, especially considering it was relatively successful.
Yeah, and one thing that Wolf said in the media availability last week, it was in a question asked about like the style of play and like what you want to see against a team like St. Louis. And I feel like the answer against Philly might be similar, but one thing he mentioned was you want guys in there who, I wish I could remember exactly how I worded it, but it was like guys who will compete and guys who can like keep their head in those moments, like bring the intensity but not go overboard and know how to manage it. And it felt targeted at Danny Pereira to me. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but if we're talking about that specific characteristic, like Ring and Valencia are your guys there, right? Do we see a reality where Danny Pereira takes the spot from one of those guys? Because I don't really know how you justify taking out Valencia. I could see maybe in a different opponent or a different game starting Pereira over Ring, but the Ring's your captain right now, right?
Yeah. I think it's a situation where on the armband situation, right, that can easily go to Julio or Brad or like any number of other leaders on the team. But like, if you are concerned about Philly's ability to press you after seeing what happened with St. Louis, it feels a little weird to not, you know, start the same lineup again that had some success against that formula.
Yeah. Where does Danny get minutes going forward then?
Well, I think some of it's going to come from, I think, rotation. I mean, like, Alex Ring is not going to be able to play every minute for sure. I think there's situations maybe where somebody's in a different formation where the need for Lindsey to sort of sit back and be that hardcore destroyer is like not as urgent, and Danny's ability to advance the ball is helpful. So I think he's like the third player in a two-man rotation at this point.
Yeah, I could see it against other possession teams maybe, right? But right now, with form, it can be tough. But that's a good problem to have, right? Like, we haven't had competition in spots for a long time.
That's true. I think it is and it isn't, because part of the problem is not quite being able to fit all the pieces together in a functional way, but having a good player to bring in off the bench, that's a good problem, but it's not all positive in my mind.
Yeah.
Let's talk for a bit about Austin FC 2. So there's been some developments. We talked a bit about the Open Cup game they're going to be playing next Tuesday.
The March 19th.
March 19th on Tuesday. So they're playing their MLS Next Pro season opener this Friday at 8 p.m. at Parmer Field. Then Austin FC plays on Saturday at Q2. Austin FC 2 is at Parmer Field on Tuesday for the Open Cup. So a big week in that. So there's kind of a debacle about how tickets to this were being given out. It seems like, I haven't seen a lot of information, but it seems like most people who requested tickets to this game got them, which is good news.
The club said that 100% of season ticket holders who requested tickets got them. So I don't know what they will do for non-season ticket holders who want to attend the match, but I guess talk to the club about that.
Yeah.
And I know there were ticket holders who were annoyed that they had to request tickets as opposed to them just showing up in their account, as has in the past. But I can see how that's legitimate, I think, because there's going to be a lot of people who are not going to go to that. From history, we know there's going to be a lot of people who would have gotten those tickets who wouldn't have gone.
Yeah, for a season ticket holder, for sure, especially on a Tuesday night. I saw people saying that they felt like they had been like lied to based on the like Open Cup tickets.
It feels bait and switchy.
It does.
It does feel bait and switchy. Yeah.
I just saw people like threatening legal action. I'm like, I don't know that there's a leg to stand on there, but like, yeah, it sucks. Like, if these are our benefits that we're getting as season ticket holders, and then this game is happening, but we're not getting those benefits, that kind of sucks.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the tough thing about this is that like MLS, and by extension, the single entity ownership structure of MLS means our ownership, put themselves in this position.
Yeah.
And now the fans are the ones who are being impacted by that.
I have more thoughts on that, but I think I'm going to wait until we get to the League's Cup season. that will be about all caps on the choices that this league has made, including like Don Garber's tweets of the League Cup trophy today, while not mentioning U.S. Open Cup at all. But that's for a later show.
Nice tease there, Jeremiah.
Yeah, I appreciate your restraint, Jeremiah. He's holding a sign right now for the folks who are just listening. We can't say what the sign says on the show because of our family friendly rating.
All right. Before we wrap up, we'd like to remind you to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Come find us on Twitter at LVAHero87, at JBentley_ATX. Mike, are you still doing Twitter or no?
I try not to, but every once in a while I get sucked back in, and then I delete it off my phone again. I'm at Future X Skeleton everywhere on the internet, because right now I'm alive, but one day I'll be a skeleton, you know.
It's beautiful. Check out the Patreon, check out Phil West Substack at verdealday.substack.com. Thanks so much for listening. We will be back next week with a review of the Philadelphia Union match and then preview the Orlando City match and then cover any other Austin FC news that comes up. Until then, I'm Lennon Cottom.
I'm Jeremiah Bentley.
And I'm Mike Craniola.
We'll get you next time. When no one is around.
Thank for nothing, so you never.
La gente.
Oh my God.
Let's do the ads and then do the Danny and Val news.
Okay.
And then do the preview.
Okay.
Danny and Val news.
Our premier response?
Oh, Danny so and Val sorry.
News. They're separate. They're separate pieces of news.
Oh, okay.
It's fine. Yeah.
Mike. Oh, they're getting married.
Yeah. Congratulations.
And we're announcing on the show. They're so cute. They would actually be an adorable couple. Just
yeah,
honestly,
we finally figured out what Danny's new neck tattoo is, and it's just Val Noel's name.